Let's turn to Genesis chapter 45. Yes, we're rapidly approaching the end of Genesis. In fact, I think we'll finish it out next week. The details, anyway. In chapter 45, we're going to have a reunion. As you'll recall, Joseph is down in Egypt, and Joseph has been having dealings with his brothers, and they do not know who he is because he's disguised himself, and he is going to reveal himself now in chapter 45, and we'll have the reunion of Joseph and his brothers. So this section in Genesis actually resolves the problem that started clear back in Genesis chapter 37 when the brothers sold Joseph down to Egypt. Now, they sold him down to Egypt, remember. It was not a nice thing to do at all. They were very cold. And now, between that time, the famine has come. Joseph's brothers have come up to Egypt to get some food. They went back and they're up again, and Joseph has been testing them to see if they can be trusted. And I mean, that's a valid thing to do. I would be a little leery of trusting someone who sold me into slavery. So he's been testing them, and they have been passing the tests. So now we're going to come to the point where Joseph is satisfied, and he's going to reveal himself to the brothers. Now, both Joseph and his brothers have a potential here for having a really bad attitude. And on the part of Joseph, I mean, who could blame him if he was bitter, if he wanted to retaliate? And keep this stuff in mind as we go through this section, because I don't know if I would have done what Joseph did. You know, he had complete power over his brothers. They had sold him into slavery. So he had a very good opportunity to respond with retaliation, revenge, bitterness. And that would have been totally understandable to anybody who's halfway human, I would imagine. Now, the brothers, on the other hand, their reaction could have been racked with guilt, terrified of what Joseph was going to do. Here they come up to Egypt now to get some food, and they find out that the prime minister of Egypt, the person in charge under only Pharaoh himself, is their brother who they sold. Now, I'd be kind of scared of how my brother was going to react in a situation like that. So try to remember the background, the situation that we have going here when we have this reunion. Because this reunion is going to be based on doctrine. And Joseph is going to make a statement of doctrine that will eliminate the bitterness. It will eliminate the desire for revenge. It will eliminate the guilt and the fear. And it's based on doctrine, the doctrine of the sovereignty of God, to be specific. So Genesis 45, 1 through 5, is actually a statement on the practical value of understanding the sovereignty of God. Sometimes we get doctrines in our head, and we think of them just as theological abstracts. They're not. Doctrines are absolutely practical, and this is going to prove it to us. Let's read verses 1 through 5. Verse 1 says, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried, 'Have everyone go out from me.' So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. "Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come closer to me." And they came closer, and he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." Now, right about there, if I was one of the brothers, my knees would be knocking, I'll tell you. "You're my brother who sold me, remember?" And then he follows it up, though, in verse 5 with this statement of doctrine. It says, "Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." So there's a statement of the sovereignty of God. "You sold me here. Don't worry about that." Why not? "Because God sent me here to preserve life, to preserve specifically the life of nation Israel." So now there isn't any more doubt in Joseph's mind that his brothers were changed men, because he had tested them. Remember, he had tested them to the point of hiding a cup in Benjamin's sack and having him arrested and seeing if the brothers would desert Benjamin or stand with him. And they stood with him. He gave them every opportunity to be jealous of Benjamin. He lavished 5 times the portions on Benjamin than he did on the other brothers, but the other brothers didn't take offense at that. They didn't get jealous. They didn't leave Benjamin in the lurch. They stood by him. And at least Judah was willing to give his life for Benjamin. So now Joseph knows that these are changed men. These aren't the guys that sold him off into slavery because they were jealous because he was dad's favorite. So he knew they were changed men. He had tested them with the most severe tests. They passed flying colors. So the testing itself, in fact, had produced spiritual growth in the brothers. In fact, it was designed to make them God conscious, and it worked. It did make them God conscious. So not only did the brothers not resent Benjamin, they were willing to share in his sufferings. Remember Pharaoh said, "I'll just take the guilty one, Benjamin," who wasn't really guilty. It was a setup. And he said, "I'll make him my slave." And the other brother says, "No, we'll all be your slaves then. If you take Benjamin, you're going to have to take all of us." So they stood by him. They did not desert him. And Judah had made a pledge to their father. He said, "If Benjamin doesn't come back, I'm not coming back either, because I'm going to defend him to the death." So we have a new set of brothers almost. And now we have the reunion. And this is going to settle all this controversy in the family. In verse 1 and 2, we have the revelation. Joseph tells them, "Hey, I'm your brother Joseph." And it gives us some of the characteristics of Joseph. You know, look back in 43, verse 30 and 31, when Joseph was first introduced to his brother Benjamin, or first had his brother Benjamin brought before him, in verse 30 it says, "Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother. And he sought out a place to weep, and he entered his chamber and wept there." Now, he hasn't revealed himself yet to the brothers, so he does not want them to see his emotions because he's not ready to reveal himself yet. So he goes to his room, he cries there, he washes up. Look at verse 31. "Then he washed his face and came out, and he controlled himself and said, 'Serve the meal.'" So Joseph is a guy who has courage. He has objectivity. He can take those emotions and control them, or what he did here, what we would call in the face of tremendous emotions. It must have been overwhelming. Remember, Benjamin was his true brother, his only true brother. The rest were half-brothers. And he was overwhelmed with emotion. He was still able to put on his game face, as we would say, and come back and do what needed to be done. So Joseph had the objectivity, he had the courage to be a leader. Now, chapter 45 opens by noting that Joseph can no longer control his emotions in front of his brothers, because everything has turned out so well that he just breaks down. In verse 3, you'll see the emotional nature of the meeting viewed from the brother's standpoint. You can see Joseph's standpoint now. He's just so glad to see, especially Benjamin, that he weeps. And then in verse 3, in the second part, it says, but his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They were scared out of their wits. They couldn't even talk. So that's the brothers' standpoint. Now Joseph goes on to explain in verse 3 through 13. In verse 3, it says, then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer. And he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall live in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me. And your children and your children's children and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will also provide for you, for there are still 5 years of famine to come, and you and your household and all that you have would be impoverished. Behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth which is speaking to you. Now you must tell my father of all my splendor in Egypt, and all that you have seen, and you must hurry and bring my father down here. So we have an explanation from Joseph. First, from the personal aspect, in verses 3 and 4, he invites them to come closer. When they get really scared, he says, come closer. And that shows an absence of a desire for revenge. You know, he doesn't say, come closer so I can stab you or pull out his sword or anything. He says, come on, gather around, you guys. It's God's doing that I'm here, not yours. Joseph's words shows that he has no, and this is amazing, he has no sense that there's a contradiction between the fact that his brothers sold him and that God brought him to Egypt. Joseph doesn't see any contradiction in that. Who sent Joseph to Egypt? Was it God or was it his brothers? There's no contradiction. His brothers did because God caused that to happen. So Joseph is in Egypt because God sent him down. In fact, from the doctrinal standpoint, Joseph affirms three times that God sent him to Egypt in this passage we've just read. So he is keenly aware of God's sovereignty. He knows God is in charge. God is in control. God sent me down to Egypt. Now, I don't know if I'd be that spiritual or not. I'm not going to say what I might have done. But Joseph understood the sovereignty of God. And he didn't blame his brothers. He said, it's not your fault. God sent me down here so I could make preparations to save our whole family. So it's really a cool thing, a good thing. So Joseph is not in Egypt by divine permission. He's in Egypt on a divine commission. He was sent there by God. It's interesting to note that the word sent, when he says that God sent me here in verse 7, is exactly the same word that's used in Exodus 3:15. Look over at Exodus 3. In verse 15, it says, God furthermore said to Moses, so now we're talking about Moses over here in Exodus, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. And that's the exact same word in Hebrew, that God sent Joseph to Egypt, God sent Moses down to Egypt. So it's a commission. It's not, he's not there because God allowed it. He's there because God shalach him there. So God sent him there. He was on a mission. Now Joseph viewed God's will and not man's will as the predominant factor in his life. Boy, we can sure take a lesson from him, can't we? He viewed everything from divine standpoint. What a guy this was. Joseph's faith was absolutely amazing. And yet, there's no tribe of Joseph. And why do you suppose that is? We'll get to that today. Because he's going to actually get two tribes. He's going to get a double portion. So this, stop and go back now for a second. This does not make the selling of Joseph not a sin. I mean, was it a sin for the brothers to throw Joseph in a pit and to sell him to some wandering Ishmaelites who sold him into slavery in Egypt? Was that a sin on his brother's part? Yes, of course it was. And this doesn't diminish that at all. But God used that sin for his own ends, for his own purposes. Now, does that mean God is the author of sin? Of course not. God took that sin and he used it to accomplish his purpose. So Joseph can say, I'm down here in Egypt because God sent me down here. He shalach me down here. Think of the years of pain that selling him had brought to Jacob, who, of course, Joseph was his favorite son, and all the pain and misery that Joseph himself had to go through when he was falsely accused of raping Potiphar's wife or trying to rape Potiphar's wife. He was thrown in jail. He came to the top of the inmates and was the head inmate and then became Pharaoh's right-hand man. But all of this in the background of having been sold by his brothers. So it doesn't diminish the sin when God uses it to his purpose. It's still a sin. But since Joseph sees the hand of God in all of this, he doesn't have any desire for revenge. Interesting fact, in chapter 45 and verse 8, it says, "Now therefore it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt." That word ruler, if you take it back to Genesis 37, in verse 8, remember when Joseph had his dream, and the dream was about the sheaves, and his sheaf was going to stand up, and the brothers' sheaves were going to bow down to him? It says in verse 8, "Then his brothers said to him, 'Are you actually going to reign over us? Are you really going to rule over us?'" And that word rule is exactly the same word that we have up in Genesis 45. So what is Joseph doing? He's ruling over his brothers. He's ruling over all the land of Egypt. So the prophecy is fulfilled. And the prophecy will be fulfilled because he's even going to bring his family to Egypt to live. Now, from the practical aspect, he explains, the solution to this problem, and they have a problem because they need food up in Canaan. They came down to Egypt to get food, right? The brothers. They need food to take back to feed their families, their father, and that's a problem. The solution to this problem, and Joseph has just told them there's going to be 5 more years of famine. We're not through this yet. And just the amount of food you can carry on your donkeys up to Canaan is not going to bring you through. There's not going to be, you can't pack enough. So that brings up a problem. And the solution to this problem is very simple. It's simple, but it's extremely difficult. Now, let me show you what I mean by that. There's a lesson involved here. Simple, but difficult. The lesson involved is this, is the salvation that's given by God must be appropriated. Now, these guys had a choice, didn't they? Could they go get their families and bring them back? Simple solution. What's the problem with that solution? Well, in a spiritual sense, the gospel is simple. Christ died for my sins. That's very simple, isn't it? Is it easy to believe that? Is it easy to put your eternal destiny in the hands of somebody else? You see what I'm... the difference between simple and easy. And that's the same problem that the brothers are facing here. Because the physical salvation of Israel, it was simple. All you have to do is go up, get your dad and your families and bring them down to Egypt, and I'll take care of you. That wasn't particularly easy. It was simple, but not very easy. And why is that? The brothers have to take the message about Jacob back to the father. What had they told their father? They lied to him, remember? They told him that Joseph had been eaten by a wild beast. So that complicates matters. It's an easy solution. Very simple, or simple solution. Go up, get your dad, rest of your families, bring them on down. But it's not easy, because if they go back there, what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to tell their dad that Joseph is still alive. So what would you think? Oh boy, dad is going to be really mad when he finds out we lied to him. So it's very, very simple. Or very simple, but not very easy, because they're going to have to admit they lied. This explains why Joseph says in verse 24 of chapter 45, in verse 24, he says, "So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, 'Do not quarrel on the journey.'" What would they be quarreling about? Whose fault was it? Who's the one that thought up this lie? Who's the one that threw Joseph in a pit? Who's the one who's behind all this, you know? And they'd be trying to share the blame and pass the blame. But Joseph says, don't worry about it. Don't fight over who is going to get the blame when you tell Dad that you lied about me. Now in verse 14 and 15, we have the reunion itself. And in verse 14, it says, "Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. And afterward, his brothers talked with him." So that's the actual reunion itself. And you'll notice Benjamin is, of course, his full brother. And the others were only the half-brothers. So that explains the special affection that he held for his brother Benjamin. Now, the lesson in all of this is very simple. You don't even need to see it on the screen. Forgiveness came through what? It came through recognition, understanding, and belief in God's sovereignty. That's how forgiveness came for these guys. They recognized God's sovereignty. They believed it. Now, Israel moves to Egypt, 45:16 through 46:30. This section is going to complete the reconciliation of the sons of Israel, or Jacob. And we're going to see that name used interchangeably here in some places. It gets confusing, but always remember, Jacob, Israel are the same person. Jacob and Israel are the same person. Remember, we studied that where God said to Jacob, your name is now going to be Israel, for you've striven with God and with man. So keep in mind, those are the same guys. Now, this drives the people who have that theory that the Pentateuch was written by five different authors, and you can tell how each one, which parts each one wrote by what word they use for God and by this and that. And one of the things they use is, well, one of them uses the name Jacob and the other uses the name Israel. And we're going to see they're interchanged here, one sentence to the next. So remember, that's the same guy. So this is the completion of the reconciliation, and everything here is positive. We have very positive. It starts, even Pharaoh is happy about it. 45:16. In verse 16 it says, "Now when the news was heard in Pharaoh's house that Joseph's brothers had come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants." So even Pharaoh was happy about it. Boy, Joseph's found his brothers. Isn't that cool? And it concludes with the reunion of Joseph with Israel, and that's over in 46:29 and 30, where it says, "Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And as soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept a long time. Then Israel said to Joseph, 'Now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive.'" Remember, that's all that Israel or Jacob wanted, was to see his son again. He was his favorite. So he wept on his neck. They met each other. He said, "I've seen your face. I'm ready to die now." But he gets even more. He doesn't die right there. This section also brings about the conclusion of Joseph's dreams, because the family now is going to live together under the rulership of Joseph, just like Joseph's dream had predicted. And remember how outraged his brothers were when he told him about that dream. You're going to rule over us? God, who do you think you are? That wasn't in the text. They put that in there. But they were outraged. And now here it's come to pass, and everybody's happy about it because of a doctrine, the sovereignty of God. So the family's going to live together under the rulership of Jacob. Now, in the rest of this section, or in this section of 45:16 to 46:30, we're going to see several types of Hebrew literature used. And I'll just note these for you so you can note them down. We're going to have a narrative first in 16 through 28. And then we'll have a theophany. And that is God is going to talk to Jacob or Israel. And then we'll have a list of names that you can read at your leisure. And we start end off with another narrative in verse 28 to 30. So that's how this section breaks down. And that's the move of Israel to Egypt. From first, now the brothers are going to go from Egypt up to Canaan. This is the first narrative. Notice how the Pharaoh is involved. In verse 16, we just read that he was pleased. And in verse 17 through 20, we find he even participates in this move when he says, "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go to the land of Canaan and take your father and your households and come to me. And I will give you the best of the land of Egypt and you will eat of the fat of the land.'" Now remember that verse. Pharaoh just promised Joseph he was going to give Israel the best land in Egypt. "Now you are ordered, do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives and bring your father and come. And do not concern yourselves with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." And that's Pharaoh talking, not just Joseph, Pharaoh himself, the head kahuna, big kahuna, I guess. So he participates in their preparations and in their journey. So as they prepare for the journey, we have a physical preparation. In 21 through 23, the sons of Israel did so. They did what Pharaoh said. "And Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. And to each he gave changes of garments. But to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments." So here again, Benjamin is still his favorite. And the brothers don't argue this time. They don't throw Benjamin in a pit on the way back to Canaan. They're changed now. Everything's okay with them. They say, "Hey, Benjamin is Joseph's favorite. That's cool." And verse 23, "To his father he sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his father on the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, 'Do not quarrel on the journey.'" And we noted why he says that. "And then they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. They told him, saying, 'Joseph is still alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt.' But he was stunned, for he did not believe them. When they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. Then Israel said..." Now, if you hold to the documentary hypothesis, then verse 27 was written by one person and verse 28 was written by somebody else, because they used two words for Jacob. Jacob revived, then Israel said, "It is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." So they have physical preparation. In verse 24, we have the psychological preparation. That's the don't fight on your way up there deciding who was guilty in sending me to Egypt. It doesn't matter anymore because it was God's doing. And then in 25 through 28, we looked at the revelation to Jacob. And it was interesting to me in just reading this, and this is pretty much narrative. It's not hard to understand what's going on here, but the thing that seemed to sell Jacob on the idea that this was true was the wagons that they had sent up for him. So the wagons seemed to impress him. Wow, Joseph must really be powerful to send all these wagons up. No, there's no recrimination. So when Joseph said, don't fight over who it was that made up the lie, it didn't matter. There's no recriminations on the part of their father. He just says, I'll go see my son Joseph again. So, the founding families of Israel are now ready to go to Egypt. And these are the founding families of Israel, and they will grow to a great nation in Egypt. Now you may be wondering, well, you know, by the time Charlton Heston gets there, they're slaves. What happened? Well, we'll get to that. But for right now, they are very much in the favor of Pharaoh because of Joseph and what a wonderful job he's done of saving Egypt from the famine. And we'll continue next hour. Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for giving us the history of the founding fathers of nation Israel. Father, we pray in Christ's name. Amen.